You can meet and hear Mark and Molly Hemingway, Robert George, Brian Wolfmiller, Larry Rast, and Will Wheaton at the 2021 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. Making the Case is Friday, July 23rd and Saturday, July 24th at Concordia University, Chicago. Early bird registration is $135. Learn more at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. Making the Case, July 23rd and 24th in Chicago.
Now look, I'm not saying every woman can be the epic trophy wife of all time, like Melania Trump. I'm not saying that at all. Now, most women can't be trophy wives, but you know, like her, maybe a participation trophy. I don't know, but all I can say is, not everybody looks like that. Amen. Not everybody looks like that. But you don't need to look like a butch either. Hey, here's something you need to know. You need to know this. Men have a need for their women to look like women.
That's Pastor Stuart Allen Clark of First General Baptist Church in Malden, Missouri. It's a rural town. Southeastern Missouri, population 4,000. Now, some famous words have been spoken in Missouri, history-making words, like Iron Curtain has descended was Winston Churchill speaking from Fulton, Missouri. But, of course, this pastor isn't Winston Churchill, and, well, you got to ask the question, how do his words somehow then appear in the New York Times, in the Washington Post, and in USA Today, in addition to many other major news outlets? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Wednesday afternoon, March the 10th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Terry Mattingly joins us. We'll talk about the national media coverage of a sermon preached by a rural Missouri pastor. And then we'll be speaking with Dr. John Bombaro on how God uses his word. In hour two of Issues Etc., we'll be looking forward to Sunday morning with Dr. Carl Fikencher about For God So Loved the World in John chapter 3. Joining us to talk about the national media coverage given a sermon preached by a rural Missouri pastor, Terry Mattingly. He's senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
I can't think of a more obscure place in Missouri than right down on the Kentucky border. Small town, 4,000 people, and probably a very small church as well. How in the world does this pastor's sermon end up national news?
That's a really complex story, but it's based on a question that I hear all of the time and have heard all of the time for years from religious leaders and church leaders that basically say over and over, our church did XYZ. I mean, the last time I heard this story was here in East Tennessee, or I heard this question. It was here in East Tennessee, and the people were from a church that had done a big conference on human trafficking. Very important, very newsworthy subject. And here's an evangelical church getting involved in trying to stop a very important human rights abuse situation, or at least get involved in it. And they wanted to know why this, which drew, you know, something like 1,000, 1,500 people came to this conference. And at the same time, there was a march on the UT campus for a woke cause that probably drew 40 people. I mean, you could count the people in the photo. And it was on page one, huge story. And if you ask an editor, why was this story news and this other story wasn't, the editor would probably say, well, this was about a newsworthy topic. It was about something new and breaking and interesting, and that makes it newsworthy. Except that, quite frankly, sexual revolution topics are in the paper like every third day, you know, involving these things, and this is a university campus. And it was, quite frankly, a very small demonstration, but it fit the template of the newspaper. Evangelicals getting together to talk about trying to save people from human trafficking, which, by the way, is also a very interesting and newsworthy topic. And Knoxville, Tennessee has like three major interstates running through our metro area and is like a hotbed of traffic coming up from Florida. And then you hit Atlanta and basically the interstates go off in about three different directions. I mean, so we live in an interstate land that's full of traffic-related crime, et cetera, in terms of trucking and all kinds of stuff. So my point is, I would argue that evangelicals holding a 1,500-person conference to discuss a newsworthy topic like human trafficking was more newsworthy and was more innovative and was newer than this week's tiny march at the UT campus related to some sexuality issue, you know, pick your topic. But that's not how editors see it. And in this particular case, I think we also have to look at several other things. I mean, there's the whole thing that scandal in the world of religion, there are editors that can only see scandal. That's the only thing that they can think of as news. And it also really helps if it's scandal by people that you're already laughing about or laughing at. So in this case, this is white evangelicals in rural America, in the middle of deep red corner of America. And you get, even if it's not even central to what the man said, you get to put Trump, or you get to put Melania Trump in the headline. And then here's my crucial point about that. And then I'll pause and breathe deep for a second and try to calm down. The other thing that's going on here is you have to think, what's the issue that's adjacent to this story? Now, you could say, well, it's sexism and it's NBC News in a almost 900-word online report about this sermon. Now, do you know how long news stories normally are on major network TV websites? I mean, 900 words is like War and Peace, you know, on one of these websites. 900 words about this sermon. And they just simply said it was a sexist sermon. And I think we would all agree that it is. But here's the key. It also is adjacent to the stories right now, very important stories. Hear me say that. Related to Church 2 and Me Too and sexual abuse and being able to pin these attitudes on all evangelicals through the words of this man, yeah, just you can't pass that up.
Okay, so let's do a little diagnostic on the thing. Had he not mentioned the former president's wife,
Yeah.
Would it have made a blip anywhere, even if it was something viral on the internet, which it wasn't, by the way, until it became a national news?
I think it would have. I think it would have been a story. You're way, way, way too young to recognize the name Maribel Morgan. Does that name ring a bell for you?
It doesn't. There must be some age gap between us.
Oh, you think. Okay, you're being so kind. She wrote a book back in the 80s called The Total Woman. And it was basically what this man was saying, only from the perspective of an evangelical woman. And if you go to Google now, 40-ish years later, and Google Maribel Morgan, Total Woman, Saran Wrap, you will still get a flock of news stories about the fact that this book recommended that, you know, to help spice things up in the bedroom every once in a while, wives should meet their husband at the door, hoping he's not bringing friends in from a golf match, but should meet their husbands at the door naked, except wrapped in Saran Wrap, to offer themselves as a present. Okay, that's a, no pun, that's a walking, breathing headline. Editors were completely unable to avoid doing stories about that. And it turned into a national joke, but it also turned into a national case study of what people wanted to think born-again Christian evangelicals were like. Now, remember, in that case, in the mid-80s or early 80s, we're not that far after Jimmy Carter has introduced the blue zip codes to the term born-again in the first place. The other thing that it makes me think about is, you know, growing up in Texas, you know, my whole family has green and gold blood from Baylor University, and I have 2 degrees from Baylor. I speak fluent Southern Baptist in Texas and Baylor and all of that. Well, okay, just answer me this question. Which Playboy cover is going to get more press in Texas? Girls of Texas A&M or girls of Baylor?
Well, it's going to be Baylor because of the tenuous connection to Baptists.
Well, it's back then it's certainly more than tenuous, but you're right on target with your connection there. It's, I mean, no, as one journalist put it to me, no editor in Texas, and probably not even in America, can resist a headline that contains Baylor, Baptist, and nude. It's just, it's impossible. It's got to go in the newspaper. It's got to go on the evening news. It's just too much fun, and you get to laugh at the right people. And that's the point. And it also doesn't help, and this gets us to a subject you and I need to talk more about. It gets us to the point also that a lot of ministers and denominational leaders don't understand how the media works and how it thinks. I think back to, once again, to the mid to late 80s. In this case, I know the year, it's 1987. I was interviewing Leighton Ford of the Billy Graham Organization. And of course, he's married to one of Billy Graham's sisters. And Leighton and I were discussing off the record, you know, after I had finished an interview, we were discussing the fact that I had begun some talks with the late Haddon Robinson at Denver Theological Seminary about trying to do some courses on media studies in the context of a seminary. And Leighton laughed really loud and just said, look, if all you did at a seminary was explain to future pastors how subjects end up in the headlines and how they what they need to do to work with the media, that subject alone would be worth trying to have a couple of courses at a seminary. And of course, what he's saying there is exactly what you and I are talking about right now. And the X factor in all of this, the thing that connects the stories today, is the factor of social media and the factor of smartphones and the factor of someone being able to take that video that was being shot during the COVID era, you know, so that people could watch it at home. And it's going to be posted on the website. And at that point, now you're saying, oh, man, what a stupid sermon my mom told me about. I'll look it up and send the URL to XYZ or WXYZ. And the next thing, it's history.
We're talking with Terry Mattingly about national media coverage given a sermon preached by a rural Missouri pastor. When we come back, had that pastor used the name Scarlett Johansson, would the New York Times have run the story?
We need people who are well-educated enough to know what the Constitution means, what it says, how its principles work.
Dr. Robert George of Princeton University talking about his presentation on the Constitution and civic virtue at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
We need people who are willing to fight for those principles, to call out politicians, whether they're liberal or conservative, whether they are Democratic or Republican, when they transgress against the Constitution. We need a people who are fit for liberty and fit for the rule of law under a Constitution like ours, a Republican polity like ours, established under the Constitution. So I'm really going to be talking about civic virtue and its relationship to constitutional structures and principles.
You can meet and hear Dr. Robert George at the 2021 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, July 23rd and Saturday, July 24th at Concordia University, Chicago. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Join the Concordia University Chicago Wind Symphony and the Sheboygan Lutheran High School Symphonic Band as they celebrate the gospel through the gift of music. Tune into the live streaming concert, Coast to Coast, Praising Father, Son, and Holy Ghost, on Friday, March 12th at 7:30 p.m. You can also help the schools reach their goal of having congregations from all 50 states watching. Learn more about becoming a partner congregation and supporting Christian music at LutheranHigh.com.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit MemoriaPress.com. And save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR21. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Postmodernism, in its sort of rejection of truth overall, has left this one area of truth remaining, and that's the lens of power.
So somewhere in between that time where I had that strong reaction to a Sanctity of Life Sunday and being offered an abortion, God changed my heart completely, and it was receiving God's word, properly distinguished law and gospel, that changed my heart.
Scientism takes the tool of science and it leverages it to justify a grand narrative of the universe, specifically without God or without reference to things divine.
Baptism is a work of Jesus to cleanse, to sanctify, to forgive His Holy Christian Church.
Friday afternoon, March the 12th, we'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. Listeners with the best votes will get the LPR bundle package. You'll find this week's contestants on the Talk On Demand archives page at issuesetc.org and in your podcast feed. You can vote in advance, facebook.com/issuesetc, via Twitter at issuesetc, or via email talkback at issuesetc.org. We're talking about national media coverage of a sermon preached by a rural Missouri pastor. Our guest is Terry Mattingly of Get Religion. So, Terry, do you think that if Pastor Stuart Allen Clark had replaced Melania Trump with actress Scarlett Johansson, do you think the New York Times would have run the story?
Sure. That's still a newsworthy name, and you get the whole Avengers clientele. Baptist pastor says, you know, wives should look like Black Widow. I mean, you know, that sings too. I mean, it's not as good as Trump, you know, for the New York Times audience. Maybe it's more of a Los Angeles Times audience. But you get my point. It's still the same essential story, and you've got a newsworthy name in it. I think it would have been a smaller story. It would have been a back of the book story, so to speak. But yeah, it would have gotten the same embarrassing ink. And when I say it's embarrassing, I hope people don't hear me saying that this wasn't an incredibly offensive and silly sermon as well. The question here is not whether this pastor needs to be read the riot act by his board of elders or deacons and his own denomination, small as it may be, but we're asking here about how stories of this kind end up being played like they're of national importance. I mean, I heard about this story from a student of mine, you know, former CNN correspondent, and he just sent me this note, you know, and it basically said, let's see, what was his exact words? Let's see if I can put my hands on it. And he was being as dry as he could be. He said, It's weird that this random preacher's sermon merits an NBC story, no? And of course, yeah, he's well aware of the fact that, no, this is totally logical that this became a national story. And it wouldn't have become a national story under other circumstances. I can think, let me give you an example now. I'll have to be very careful with my wording here, not to offend people too much. But years ago, there was a very controversial early gay rights activist within the Episcopal Church who was preaching a sermon in which he was talking about why sexual experience was so important to the concept of personhood. And in the midst of this, he said, it's hard to imagine anything more offensive. He basically said, so do I think Mother Teresa would have a more fulfilled life if she, and then he used very blunt language that basically said, had sex. And he said, of course she would. Okay, needless to say, that made a few headlines. In the very back of newspapers, didn't make huge national news, didn't get anywhere near the play when you consider how offensive it was. I remember talking to an editor when I included that in a column. I said, now, how careful are we going to be in terms of how we word this thing? And she said, well, that's one of the reasons why nobody is covering this story, is nobody can imagine anybody saying that. But the fact that this was a nationally known person and an activist within a major denomination that gets a lot of press, you could ask the question, why wasn't that a national story? Why wasn't that covered by major networks? Well, gay Episcopalians talking about sexual liberation, even in the bluntest of terms, is not news. White evangelicals saying incredibly crass and embarrassing things about women and mentioning Melania Trump, that's news. Now, our listeners may be saying, I still don't get why it is other than political and media bias. But to the people making the decisions, it punches all the right buttons.
Are you saying really at the heart of this, even though we don't know whether or not this particular pastor is a Trump supporter, he'll pass for one in the media because he happens to mention Trump without some sort of negative connotation in his sermon, and that really this story just strummed the strings of the typical Trump supporter narrative that drives a lot of the reporting nowadays?
It's bad enough that it's white evangelical, and I'm at least glad that in the NBC story, they explained this was not a Southern Baptist church, that this was a part of a very small, I'm not going to say splinter, because Baptists are all over the place. There's thousands of Baptist denominations and flocks and whatever. But my point here is, how big is this church? Who does this man speak for? If a world-famous pastor at Second Baptist Church in Houston, with thousands of members, TV ministry, and genuine clout in the Southern Baptist Convention, says this, oh yeah, I'm going to accept that as a national story. It certainly was a national story a couple of years ago when one of the founders of the conservative resurgence of the Southern Baptist Convention back in the late 70s and early 80s, when he made some comments about the attractiveness of women and stuff. Nothing as blunt or as wild as this, at least not that I remember that it was as blunt and wild or certainly sustained, but it was from pretty crude, you know, crass stuff. It'd be a better way of saying it, not crude. But that was news because you were actually dealing with someone connected to a major seminary and who had been a founder of a national headline news story related to the Southern Baptist Convention. This Missouri thing, tiny town, tiny church, pastor that no one has ever heard of, but wow, what a soundbite. Which leads me to another subject. When I was teaching in Washington all those years, one of the things we used to do is I was teaching people how to write Associated Press wire service type copy. And when you hear a speech, you've got to learn to recognize what in it is news, this exact topic that we're talking about. And one of the things I used to do was play them a speech and let them hear all the incredibly nuanced and deep and substantive stuff that might be in this speech, and then say, now let's be cynical and say, spot the soundbite. Out of all of this incredibly deep and interesting material, what's the one sentence that's going to make it into the evening news? What's the one thing that is said in a way that's kind of, and this is pre-clicks with a mouse, or it wasn't as big a deal at that point. What's the sound bite? And the students kept trying to pick a sound bite that had some sort of substance to it. And I'm saying, well, frankly, that's the lead I would want you to write. But we're not talking about the story that I want you to write or that you would write for the Associated Press. We're talking about what's going to be on the evening news of TV stations and going to be yelled about on cable opinion shows. And inevitably, it's a soundbite that makes a certain candidate look bad, if that's the candidate who needs to look bad, or it's a soundbite that makes the candidate who's good look good and clever, usually saying something about the candidate who's supposed to look bad. In other words, it's what we would call a horse race quote. It's a political horse race quote related to the machinery of politics, not whether or not deep down in this story was, you know, a truly interesting 200 or 300 word discussion of like COVID relief or something substantial. Spot the soundbite can also be played with speeches by the Pope, and I have done that. And you can have the Pope saying incredibly important things about a host of issues, but if you play Spot the soundbite that's going to be featured by the international media is going to be whichever one is more about a political issue, the environment, or a hint that Trump's wrong on immigration, you know, or something like that. It has to fit the subjects that are predetermined to be newsworthy. That's what I was saying about that pair of Knoxville stories that I got in a discussion with a bunch of people one day, just, you know, in a restaurant here in Oak Ridge.
So, Terry, two quick final questions. When Senator Barack Obama was running for president, he had a controversial pastor, yeah, Jeremiah Wright, in a major city, that's Chicago. And the mainstream media provided pretty thin coverage of this, his controversial ideas, which he did not hold back on. How do you explain this lack of media coverage with that a minute?
Well, once again, we're talking good guys versus bad guys. The other thing I would say is that those sermons are actually, I wrote a column about them, they're actually very interesting. And I'll say something that you might find strange. Theologically, what he was saying, that God is going to, you know, the famous God damn America, he was saying that God will hold America in judgment because of its acts of racism and acts against the poor and acts against the environment and whatever. And the soundbite was that he was intentionally saying, I want God to damn America. And that might be part of what he was saying, but stop and think about it. Isn't that remarkably the same theological equation as Pat Robertson saying that God is going to send hurricanes at cities that pass gay rights initiatives? It's a remarkably similar theological construction there. And so my point is, this is someone that, to help Barack Obama, who clearly was the Messiah, you know, from the viewpoint of many people in the media, you couldn't blow up what this pastor was saying. But at the same time, the good stories that were written about those sermons were written by professional religion writers, people who could call people on different sides of that issue and explain what this man was actually saying, even in the controversial words that he chose to say it. So once again, we're here at one of these subjects where a story is completely different if it's written by a religion writer who might know what a public figure like that is trying to say and being able to help translate a little, versus someone who's going to yank out the one or two sentences that scream headline and turn it into a story. I agree with you that that particular subject long ago deserved much more coverage than it got. And some people were also scared of touching it because it raised so many issues related to race, valid issues, I would say. But the best coverage that was done of those sermons was done by religion reporters. In my opinion, the worst coverage that was done of those sermons was done by political reporters or general assignment reporters. And there's a lesson for denominational leaders and pastors and others to learn as well. You have got to know who the religion reporters are in your region. You've got to know how they think, and you've got to let them help you understand the media as well.
With only a minute here, what advice can you give to pastors, all of whom are now streaming their sermons because of COVID, to prevent them from becoming the next Pastor Stuart Allen Clark?
Well, first of all, they should tape their words so that they know what they said, and they're in a position to say, well, I also said this, this, and this. Although, once this thing goes hot in social media, that's not going to help you. And in this case, it certainly would have helped, would not have helped this pastor. But maybe, you know, thinking back to what Leighton Ford wanted me to teach pastors at a seminary, maybe pastors need to learn to play spot the soundbite. And if they're going to get up and address a controversial subject, they need to prepare their outline and say, now here's the big ideas, here's the things I want to stress. But what am I going to say that if someone emails an audio clip yanked out of context of the sermon, what's the headline? What's the worst case scenario? If pastors could learn to play spot the soundbite with a little bit of both cynicism and wisdom, it might help them in the long run.
Terry Mattingly is senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi. He is author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thanks.
Glad to be here.
When we come back, how God uses his word. Dr. John Bombaro will join us. He's author of a recent column titled Why God Works Through Words.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
This fallen creation is bested by tornado, hurricane, flood, pandemic, and more. LCMS Disaster Response helps our congregations, their pastors, and other church workers to reach out to their members and neighbors with mercy which flows from Christ's altar. We offer quality volunteer training, help for congregational readiness and response, and disaster grant funding. To learn more, visit lcms.org/disaster. That's lcms.org/disaster.
Our Christian faith is under constant attack, and we must be proactive in keeping our children in the church. At Faith Lutheran School in Plano, Texas, we believe that an education rooted in God's Word is one that stands against the very gates of hell. Nothing in this world is more important. Offering a rigorous classical Lutheran education, we provide in-person and live online remote learning opportunities for preschool through grade 12. To learn more, visit flsplano.org, flsplano.org.
Superstition is the belief that one event caused an unrelated event. It's often tied up with false beliefs about God and how he works in the world. Is there really such a problem with superstitions? Is there really such a problem with saying knock on wood or good luck? Explore this and more in the March issue of The Lutheran Witness. We will talk about scientism, superstition, New Age, and so much more. To order your copy, visit cph.org/witness. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
You may be one of those pastors who need to be refreshed and refueled because of your parish ministry.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Dr. Charles Geeshan.
Concordia Theological Seminary has a wonderful program, not only in continuing education during the summer, but in an advanced study program called the Doctor of Ministry. And it's a very practical program because it focuses on congregational ministry. It incorporates biblical theology with the ministry of the congregation. It's also very accessible for pastors, and it's also affordable. You can major in pastoral care and leadership, teaching and preaching, or mission and culture. And we pray that pastors will take advantage of this program.
Learn more about the Doctorate of Ministry program at ctsfw.edu or by calling 1-800-481-2155, Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.